And you're very welcome back to Lifeline. It's coming up to 20 past 10. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined in the studio with Christine Keegan and Antoinette. Good morning. Thanks very much for coming in today to Lifeline.
Morning, girls.
And Tony's here. We're remembering the start. It's hard. It's really hard to believe. Like, the worst tragedy ever in Ireland took place 35 years ago, coming up in 2 days' time, the 14th of February, Valentine's night. 48 died and 214 injured. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, Christine? How and Anton, how have you moved on, or have you moved on in them 35 years? Or where are things at now?
We haven't moved on. It's still like you're trapped in 1981, Valentine's Day, because successive governments each time have ignored the fact, right, that there was an injustice done on the 48 victims and the injured. Mm. We were given a tribunal of inquiry, which blocked us from getting our judicial rights. And the owner of the building got away with everything. He got compensated, right, for blocking and blocking doors and negligence. And we haven't moved on because we've given submission after submission after submission to the Department of Justice. And I researched Geraldine Fay. She's been here since 2002, and the submissions that she's given in 2003 proved to the Department of Justice and the government at the time, right, that the fire was in the wrong place. It didn't start on the sea. And we have the evidence, and we've since given another submission to Francis Fitzgerald, Minister Francis Fitzgerald, in, actually, Richard Bybarra, he done the favour for me. I met him in Buswell's Thursday fortnight ago, and I gave him the two brown envelopes and asked him, could he do me a big favour, because the official that was appointed by the Minister refused to give the second submission. This is the DPP file, where the DPP admits that the Stardust Tribunal of Inquiry had proven that there was lies told in that, but she couldn't do anything because it was a tribunal of inquiry and not a court of law. So it's up to the Department of Justice to correct all this, but the official refused to hand this to the Minister. So Richard Bybarra, done me the favour, on the Dáil Chambers, the day that the Dáil was finished, when Enda Kenny dissolved it, Richard Bybarra went over to Minister Fitzgerald and handed her the two brown envelopes, and she has them since the 3rd of February, and she has not even rang to say that she sees where all the wrong was.
And in your own life, I mean, it's 35 years on and you're still fighting for justice.
Still fighting for justice.
In your own words, like, I mean, you've three daughters that went out that night, and as you said, only one came home. I have three daughters, and to think it's the worst nightmare any parent. You don't, and Christina, you probably have never got over it. You probably learned to live with that. But yourself, how have you moved on, or have you moved on at all?
No, I haven't moved on.
No, it's still very raw, very tragic. It's unbelievable that you have to still fight 35 years on to get recognition and justice. And Antoinette, you were there yourself on the night as well.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
So you had to.
Well, I went with my sisters, Mary and Martina, and Mary Kenny, and my friend Helen Henvey. And my brother had gone as well, but he had been refused. Martina was 16, John was 17, I was 18, and Mary was 19. So three of us got in, and my brother had to go home. But I'll never forget that night, because what I've seen is not what's on public record. There was only a small fire on the sea, right, and then suddenly, right, the whole thing came crashing down on top of us.
Was that due to the carpet tiles?
Fire wasn't there. It wasn't on the sea. It didn't start there. There was two phone calls made that night, and there's only one on public record. The two calls was made at 1:43 a.m., both to 999, and they refused to acknowledge the second one. This is where the most serious fire is, that's in the roof space. And a resident rang from Maryfield Crescent. She rang at 1:43 to say there was a massive fire in the roof space.
They started in the roof,
and just it tipped down probably through the eaves onto the sea. But the whole thing came crashing down. Nobody had a chance of getting in. It started up in the roof, and there's outside witnesses and all that seeing it starting in the roof. But the government refused to acknowledge it started up there.
And for yourself, Antoinette, I know you're fighting for justice for the lives that were lost. But for yourself, how did you deal with getting on with your life? Apart from all this, I know you've put most of your life probably into fighting for justice, but have you moved on in your own life?
Well, I tried to move on, and I had a son, and then I have a grandson now. But it's still there every day. Like every single day you wake up until the truth is put on public record.
And do you think that if the truth comes and you get what you're looking for, you finally then might be able to move on?
You can get a semblance of justice and a semblance of moving on, right, that they're not trapped there, right, that your sister's died in vain and 46 others died in vain and no justice for them.
The thing that strikes me from what I know in relation to this is that there has been a number of inquiries in relation to this, but one inquiry has turned the other one completely on its head, and it has said that it distorted the facts, and it actually refers to an investigation file completed by the Gardaí Ar Chúlach, which said that the Gardaí Ar Chúlach completed an excellent investigation file in relation to this, but that the facts were cherry-picked out of it. And the second inquiry completely turns the first inquiry on its head, and I quote, that the investigation at the time reported that the fire was an arson. The finding of arson has been ruled out by the investigators, as there was never any evidence to support the arson finding, even at the time of the tragedy.
That's right, yeah. But before that came out, for 28 years, everyone that was in that building, right, was classed as an arsonist. Everyone that died was classed as an arsonist, because it was arson. So, because it was caused by arson. And this was the whole idea Ray Bourke brought out, because there's no legislation against an arsonist. You don't know who it was.
And of course, it's very important for people listening in this morning who may not even have been born when this terrible tragedy happened, which, as Debbie said earlier, very hard to believe that it's 35 years since that terrible, terrible night. But it is very important, and I suppose I'm not saying that it gives you any sort of consolation, but a lot of the legislation that we have now was born out of that tragedy. And it's very hard for people to appreciate that simple safety legislation that we have now at our disposal and take as for granted was never even thought of at that stage.
No, not back then.
Yeah, but when you think of it still, Tony, right, the legislation still isn't enacted, because look at Priory Hall.
Yeah.
That was a fire trap. Look at the other apartments. So there's still shortcuts getting taken.
Can I ask you, you know, and I suppose maybe I'm really asking you to expand slightly on what Debbie has said. What exactly are you hoping that either this or the next Minister for Justice will do for you? Are you looking for a final statement? Are you looking for another inquiry? Are you looking for... What is it that you hope? Well, what would give you peace, insofar as you can get peace?
Yeah, it's actually very simple to correct the public record. You can implement the Railway Act, right? And all the wrongs that's in the Keane Tribunal book and the Coffey opinion, right, they can correct it by going into the Railway Act and just doing a simplified thing by putting all the wrongs right. And it wouldn't take long to do that. It's not going to cost the taxpayer money, but it's just the fact, right, that the people that lost their children will know that the truth is on public record of what exactly did happen. Instead of like, oh, it'll never be known, but we know what happened. But the Department of Justice and the Department of Environment and the Taoiseach's office, none of them want to acknowledge the fact, right, that there was a room that was built in the Stardust that was illegally built. He had no planning permission for it. He stored all his oils up there, all the highly inflammable liquids. There was electrical problems because DSB had given a warning over Arkin. So one hit off the other, and it was a bomb waiting to go off.
Yeah, there is reported there was 45 5-gallon drums of cooking oil.
Yeah, in the roof space.
Plus other cleaning equipment was stored there. Clearly we would hope that nothing like that would be happening today.
Yeah, but even then it was illegal. So he had no plan of permission. So why did he get away with it?
It's unbearable to think that you're still, after 35 years, fighting for this, fighting to get justice, fighting to get answers, fighting to live your life again, to move on.
And basically, it was fighting for the truth.
The truth,
exactly. I mean, why have
going
truth?
To get a 35
years old? Why is the minister holding them two submissions, Air Researcher Jenny and Fye, put so much time and effort in, and she, and by the way, she hasn't even been paid. She's done this since 2002. She's worked on this for us, and they actually have her report on the website without her consent.
It just seems, I mean, they say, oh, we've seen clips, but we've seen there was a film about it, the worst tragedy in Ireland, which it really, really was. We've lost so many young people in this area. I mean, people talk about, and everyone you speak to would know someone. Yeah. And we forget about the injured as well. There was a lot of children injured probably maimed for life as well. Yeah. You know, and then they lost a lot of young people. It was a tragic. And it just seems 35 years on and still nothing. Still yourself, Christine, at your age, should be, you know, relaxing and kind of enjoying your life. And like, as you said, it's kind of rude. Well, how old were you at the time?
18. I met with an ex-garda there last Sunday, and he was telling me he was there on the night, and he said, like, for what they seen and what they had to do that night, they couldn't even cope. They fell apart, and there was no counselling put in place. So like he was saying about the families that lost, they should have had counselling.
Were you not offered counselling?
No, nothing. No counselling. And even the firemen, right, we're still in close contact with them. In actual fact, they're going to the mass on Sunday. They're being in their uniform. They were on the phone the other day to me. But none of them that had to do the removal and what they had to experience got no counselling. Like, parents that lost their loved ones. Like, my mother said when she realised, right, that all the hospitals checked them all and there's no sign of Mary and Martina. She was told to go to the City Morgue. So she went into the City Morgue, and she went, and Mary and Martina Keegan, they're over there, and she asked, could she see them? And she was told, remember them the way they were.
Oh, my God.
Coffins.
Closed coffins. Yeah, they're only identified by their jewellery.
And of course,
it has to be also remembered that there are some people who were properly identified only in recent years with the advent of DNA. Yeah. And they were exhumed and...
But again, that was only through the fact that Air Researcher had she had gone to the Birmingham Science Laboratory and the one that happened in the USA, I can't remember, it'll come to me, not the other one that happened.
Can't think either, it'll come to us.
But she actually got the quotes off them and she gave them to the government. And then again, we had a big fight on hand because we had Bertie Hearn saying that we do our own Irish style. And Michael McDowell was saying, like, you know, this is not possible, we can't do it. But it was only through the persistence of the committee, Geraldine Fye, and her solicitor, right, that the five was identified. Because otherwise they would have been left that way.
But why, wasn't there a story there, the five people that weren't identified, one of them had a plate or something, a two-plate, which it could have been identified very easily. Why did it take so many years for that to be identified?
Again, that was discovered, right, by a researcher. She discovered who owned the plate because there was only one person, that was Morty Kavanagh.
Yeah, so what, it seems just a lack of stupidness, really. Why, I mean, one person had a plate, why wasn't that the person identified? Why wait all them years for that body to be identified?
Exactly. But his mother and father went to their grave. They didn't even know where he was.
They didn't know before.
Yeah, where the five lads was unidentified.
It's just tragic. Are you going to get answers? Do you think at this stage you're going to get?
Well,
we have
a commitment from Micheál Martin that if he gets in, and I got it in writing off him, because initially when I spoke to Enda Kenny, he told me that I'd never have to make another phone call. He gave me his mobile number and all. If I get into power, you'll never have to make another phone call. I promise you, he said, you'll have your inquiry. And the minute he got into power, I asked for a meeting with him, and I couldn't. The 5 years that he's in there, not once would he meet me. I've done sitting protests and all the same, and he wouldn't meet me.
False promises.
Yeah. And the same with Ed O'Reardon. I've tried to contact him umpteen times, right, and he won't answer his mobile to me either.
I think it's, you know, there are things that in both Debbie and I's profession that we come across that really do stop you in your tracks, and at times, and anybody who knows me will know that I am not somebody who is stuck for words. I can usually find them at will, but you do see things and you do come across things that actually leave you dumbfounded, and I can't understand for the life of me why, for what is a very, very simple thing, because in researching this morning, the one thing that's absolutely crystal clear to me is that anybody going in now, 35 years later, it would be a very short investigation.
That's what I said.
Because all the evidence is there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a matter, really, of putting it together and trimming it down into a report and issuing it. But, I mean, the arson thing has been kicked around as a football for years. Now that has been totally dispelled, and I mean, we have clear quotes here from some of the inquiries. Now, I also have come across the situation where you had senior counsel John Gallagher was appointed back in 2008, but he stood down because he actually represented the Gardaí.
That's right, at the inquest, yeah.
And his replacement, Paul Coffey, reported to the government in 2008 that the tribunal was wrong to make a finding of probable arson and that the public record should be corrected.
Yeah, he gave two final reports. One recommended a new inquiry, and then it was out to 70 alterations done in his. And he got 435,000 off the government for doing that report.
But the version which was made public next month omitted that fact.
That's right.
You know, so
I mean, that's the Department of Justice again.
Pardon me for being a little bit cynical, but it would almost seem that instead of a campaign to exonerate you, that there's a campaign to stop you from the truth from coming out.
See,
they're saying as well,
exhaust us that we go away, that's what it is.
Yeah, and just give up. But they're saying it can't be proven that those flammable liquids, because it wasn't dropping from the ceiling where the fire was.
But it was dripping, because we have a professor to say, right, that the fire came down, right, Professor Prendeville, I think it was, he said that the fire came down on everyone the injured, right, because it head, neck, shoulder injuries.
Can I ask you, did the fact that the tag of arson was finally and publicly removed from everybody, did that give you any consolation?
No, because when I went back to the principal officer and asked him, that's grand, arson has been removed, are you just going to go after the owners never to get the compensation that he was paid back? And he said, no. Like, it was all about money for them. But if it had been anyone else, right, and they had been compensated on a wrongful act, the people would be coming back to you for the money.
It seems so.
There's a law for the rich and a law for the poor. Well, and if you're down, you're down, and they stand on you.
You know, I mean, it seems unfair. Now, that's based on what I know, and having met you this morning, that would be as far as I would be prepared to push it. But it seems very unfair, and it seems that, as I said, be it the cynic in me or whatever, but it just seems that there's a vested interest somewhere that, I mean, it's 35 years later.
Yeah. I tell you where the vested interest is. It's the civil servants in the Department of Justice. They're the ones that are doing this. Now, the minister got the two
reports. But even if you were to follow that to its logical conclusion, I mean, I doubt very much that there's any of the civil servants left in the department who were there 35 years ago. So, you know, this is the argument that I'm trying to put up the counter-argument to it. You know, because...
Well, like, from the time that we started going to the Department of Justice, right, this particular civil servant, he's still there. And then one that he couldn't win with us, right, he was demoted.
Is it a case, do you think, of and I suppose this is widening it out outside what we're here to discuss, but is it really a situation where the thing we hear about the unofficial government or the permanent government, where the civil service actually do call the shots and the ministers...
Oh, that's right, yeah. They do. You know? They tell them where it is and what to say and everything else.
And can I ask you, I suppose opportunity and opportunism is a great thing. At the time we're in now, coming up to an election, has your hopes been raised again, or has anybody given you any indication if we're in, other than Micheál Martin, as you alluded to?
No, Richard Bybear has given commitment. Tommy Bruin has given commitment. John Lyons.
And will they stand by their commitments?
Yeah. Like, John Lyons actually has it on his leaflet going around, right, that he supports us, a new inquiry. And so does Richard Bybear. He's always there for us. Tommy Bruin, he's always been there for us. And the only reason why, like, I had on a raiding, right, I actually rang him, he answered the phone, and I said, can I meet you in government buildings? That was the only reason why I got to meet Minister Fitzgerald.
Mm.
And that was on the 18th of July 2013, or 2014, 2 years ago this year. And still, she's seen, when everything was explained to her, she's seen the wrong, and she goes, I can see what's wrong here, she said. How can we be assured, right, if we do this again, it's going to be right? She has the two submissions in her hand. All she has to do is say, right, this is an election. I have to sort this out. It was amazing how she raped five million the other day because of the shootings going on. What happens if there's another Stardust?
Yep, what happens?
The only thing we can say, I suppose, is that, you know, as I said at the top of the segment, that an awful lot of legislation has been put in place as a result of the terrible tragedy that happened in the Stardust. But I still think that it is beholding on public representatives, who are, after all, there at the behest of the taxpayer, which is everybody else. We, as they'd like to remind us at election time, we are their bosses. So therefore, I mean, I think that after 35 years, and as you said, so many people have been gone to their grave without the truth being exposed, I think it's the very least that could be done. And I think it would be, you know, you can have all the platitudes you want, but I think the fitting tribute to the people that died that night would be for the truth to be published for once and for all. And on that line, how hopeful are you that you will get the truth published?
I'm very hopeful, yeah. I am.
Would it be safe in saying that you're more hopeful this time than you have been?
There I have been for a long time, yeah.
Than you have been in the previous 35 years?
Yeah, well, I was hopeful when Andy Kenny got in, but he never gave it to me in writing. But I have it in writing off Micheál Martin, signed by himself, and I have the commitment from the Independents and Sinn Féin. I'm hoping Fianna Gael and Labour don't get in again.
I just hope you get the truth. After all these years, I just hope that's what you get. Now, I know more on the kind of personal, and I know there's been a tribute in, there's a Stardust Park, there's a memorial in Beaumont Hospital.
Yeah.
Because, as I said, there's so many children, and they were children, 15, 16, 17, were lost their lives in this area. The place itself, where it took place, have you fought to get that knocked down, made into a park or anything, or just...
No, I only recently found out that that's been bought over because I was trying to organise lighting for there for tomorrow night to do a candlelight vigil, and the property management told me that there's new owners to have it now. So I don't know what their plans is, but the plan and permission that the Butterleys got for it included a memorial.
Oh, it did include a memorial.
It did include a memorial, so I don't know whether that's, like... Whatever they're going to do, they have to go by the plan. It's a 10-year plan of permission, right? And that was, I think, in 2006, I don't know. I don't know when it was done anyway, but there's still time on it. But I heard it was just recently sold anyway.
I think that should have been just all knocked
down and
made
into
a park. Just a park, a big memorial park, and 48
But then again, it's profit before people.
You would have thought that that would have been a given, you know, that was something which wouldn't even have been up for discussion. But, I mean, again... It's easy for us to sit in a radio studio and say this is what should be and that's what should be. It's a different thing when you're out there in the cold face dealing with the hard facts of it. And as you say, you know, I suppose when everything is boiled down, it comes down to the power of the almighty dollar.
That's
and
it,
you know. But I still think that, sorry, Davey, I still think that it's absolutely ludicrous, and it's only my opinion, but that 35 years on, for what appears on the face of it to be something that would bring about closure so easily and so simply, that you are still fighting. I mean, to me, it should be a given, and it's only my opinion.
Yeah, it should be. It should be a natural thing to give for to get the truth on public record rather than hide the truth. But from day dot one, my father, Lord of Mercy, always said it's had been swept under the carpet, lies after lies. When he heard it was arson, he went mad. And then he went, we thought he was going to the graveyard, but he actually went down to the Stardust and assaulted Eamon Butterley.
Well, you know, when you lose two children, you're going to actually do anything to...
You can't control it.
Like, you can't. I mean, it's...
Well, human nature.
And it's scarred the lives of hundreds of people in this area, you know, mentally and physically. I mean, to go out one night and not to come back, it's your worst nightmare. I mean, and especially one child, but two children, Christine, I don't know how you've managed to move on. Luckily, you have Antoinette there and you've other children as well. But
Mrs. McDamon lost three children. She's had to put in a plaque down in Eadmore. A little, it's on the statue of a lady. She got some fella to, for in memory, because it's the 35th anniversary for the 48 victims.
And do you all meet like the victims? Do you have like a general meeting once every so often?
Yeah.
Kind of support each other still.
Well, it's just with the committee, like Mrs. McDaniel and Pat Kennedy and Eugene Kelly and Gertrude Barrett, like they'd be all highly involved in, with the committee. So we have meetings every so often, and whatever we're going to do, like tomorrow night we're doing the candlelight vigil, Sunday is the mass, and then next Thursday we're doing a picket outside the coroner's office, because the inquests have never been completed. We have no verdict on them.
After 35 years.
So no death certs have been issued yet?
Oh, the death certs have been issued, but it was medical verdict. So there's no verdict like of murder, manslaughter, death by suicide, death by misadventure.
No verdict yet.
Like, my sister's death certificate, or our coroner's thing, she's number 7, and my other sister's 21. Right, and on the map of the dead, the two of them aren't even in the spot where they were. You know, because I was there that night and I was with them. So when you look at the map of the dead bodies, then when I questioned it, a fireman told me that they had taken all the bodies out and then realised he should have marked them. So the whole investigation from start to finish was flawed.
And you got out that night, Antoinette?
Yeah, a fella seen me with a white blouse and pulled me away from my sisters.
And that must be on your mind for years as well, like the guilt as well. Why did I and why did my sisters? Yeah. And you have to live with that along with trying to get justice as well.
I attempted suicide a good few times as well, just couldn't cope.
You just go, well, I can understand that. You know, seeing you going out with your two sisters and then come back, and it's horrific. It's horrific even to think about it and to just be...
And
kind of
best friend Mary Kenny, she was killed that night as well.
Oh, your friend as well?
Yeah. Well, she's my sister's best friend, but she was very close to me as well.
There's so many. So like 48 dead in the one. It's absolutely
unbelievable. And you see, what a lot of people have to remember is, and it's really, really hard, you know, for people to put this in perspective. But what you have to remember is that 35 years ago, this area, as we are describing it, was a lot smaller, with a smaller population than it is. So it made an even... I mean, if that was to happen today, it would make a humongous effect on this area. So can you imagine 48 people dying 35 years ago when the area was even smaller again?
But that's why that age group kind of know, like the people worked in Northside Shopping Centre, your local shop, so everyone kind of knew someone who was affected by it. So it was a community tragedy, and to think that you're still fighting for justice 35 years on. I mean, your whole life has been kind of ruled by this.
Yeah.
You know, for yourself, Christine, as the mother, and yourself being their sister, every day it must be in your mind trying to get justice. Is this what your daily life is like every day?
Every day, yeah. Wake up at Stardust, yeah. Every day.
So Saturday is the 35th anniversary. You're having there's a candle.
Sunday.
When is the candle?
We're going to do it tomorrow night down on the Stardust site.
Down on the Stardust site.
Yeah. Okay. And play They Never Came Home.
Oh, we have that up there. We'll play that now in a minute. Yeah. And where's the mass taking place?
In St. Joseph's Church in Coolock.
In Coolock.
Yeah.
And as you said, since then, like you've lost your dad, people have gone to the graves.
Yeah.
Probably haven't identified, or their children haven't been identified. Is there five bodies that still aren't identified?
Or no, they've been identified. There's the other thing, and just want to say, Debbie, is spoke to my solicitor, well, their solicitor on Tuesday, and because the letter that we got back off the Department of Justice, we believe now we have a case now for leave for judicial review. He's in consultation with the senior counsel and junior counsel. This will be the first time we'll ever get into a court of law.
Really?
Yeah. Now, it's going to cost a lot of money, so we have to start fundraising again.
Okay, so how do you do your fundraising? Let us know here, and we'll advertise it here for you.
Just anyone that wants to donate money, and that's the bank account there.
We'll keep that and put on the notice. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. And for those of you...
It's Ulster Bank, Coolock Village.
For those of you who are interested in donating to that is Ulster Bank in Coolock Village, and the account number is 743-71027. That's 743-71027, and the SART code is 98-50-15. We will give you those details again before we go off air at 11 a.m.
Just want to say, Christine and Antoinette, thanks very much for coming in, and thanks for talking to us. And I'm just hoping, after all this time, and hoping with this party coming, hopefully you will get answers. And as you said, all you want is the truth.
That's it.
Certainly, we wish you the closure that you would you seek so desperately and have fought so vigorously for the last 35 years, and we really hope you do get the closure that you want.
Praise
finally.
God, you do. Thanks very much.
Thanks
Thank
once
you.
Again.
Thank you.